From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when a little girl was growing up in the Bronx. Melanie lived with her mother, who struggled with schizophrenia and paranoia. Growing up with a mother who struggled with mental illness wasn't easy for Melanie. She says in her darkest times, her mother tried to kill her, and Melanie did what she could to cope. She moved out eventually, couch surfed, started using drugs. Eventually, Melanie found her way to Rochester, where she attended a church and met a woman who she came to call her Black Mama. This woman took Melanie in, cared for her, and gave her fresh hope. And years later, when this special woman passed away, Melanie took on her role and became Mama Mel to young people who needed a mother, young people who reminded her of herself in many ways. This is just part of one powerful story related to mothers and motherhood that people in our community are sharing. It's part of this year's Listen to Your Mother event, an annual performance honoring the impact of moms. The national movement is back for its fifth year in Rochester, which has been one of 42 cities that have staged the show on or around Mother's Day for almost a decade now. The 2019 cast of more than a dozen people will share their stories, likely making the audience, as they always do, laugh definitely, cry definitely, and connect with one another. This year's themes include acceptance, imperfection, rising above challenges, and love. We'll get a preview this hour with some of the performers, and we'll discuss the power of storytelling. And as we do that, I think it's a good time to say, I always like this show. To me, I think many people listening can think about a mother in your life. Maybe it's your mother, maybe it's a mother, maybe you are a mother, or maybe you can think of a story. What's a story of motherhood that stands out the most to you? We all have that. And what Listen to Your Mother does is they bring some amazing storytellers. And I don't use that word very often. That's a big word. But they do that. And it's a great chance for us to kind of get a little preview of them and maybe be inspired by what we hear this hour. Corey Spike Carter is executive director and MC of this year's production of Listen to Your Mother. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
And things have changed a little bit this year. Tell me about that.
So this is our fifth year, our anniversary year in Rochester. We've moved locations. So this year we are at the Hochstein Performance Hall. Want to reassure people there's plenty of parking and the facilities are wonderful there. We're going to have it ALS interpreted and it's wheelchair accessible. So wanting to bring out as many people as possible to the show this year.
People like to take their moms?
People take their moms for sure. It's a wonderful Mother's Day gift. It's a really meaningful way to celebrate Mother's Day. But people also take their girlfriends and their friends and their partners and their husbands. We have someone in the cast this year who her husband surprised her 2 years ago and said, you know, get in the car. Here's a bouquet of flowers and took her to the show. She auditioned this year and she's going to tell her story.
Wow, that's remarkable. So it's Saturday, 7:30 p.m. Saturday night at Hochstein. And online in advance, you can get tickets. You can also get tickets at the door if they're still available. And so we'll make sure on our various platforms, we'll link more information if you want to do that. You've had big crowds in the past, though, just sort of as a warning.
Yeah, big crowds. I think we started our first year with a sold-out show of 500 people.
Yeah.
And last year, we were upwards of 750. We can hold up to 850, but we are on our way there. So if people are interested, they should get their tickets ahead of time.
All right. Listen to Your Mother, Mother's Day weekend. Max Orr is here, 2019 cast member. Max, welcome. Thank you for taking the time to be here. Also with us is Sarah Oliveri, a 2019 cast member. Sarah, welcome.
Thank you.
And Marvelous Marvin is a 2019 cast member. Welcome to you.
Thank you much.
Well, there's a lot of different directions to go here. And Corey, before we kind of listen to some of their stories, we're going to listen to their stories as they listen to your mother. How many auditions do you typically get? What's that process like?
We get each year about 40 or so people that audition. And our process is that we choose 13 stories that we can weave together to show the highs and lows of the motherhood experience. This year, we're really proud of this cast. We've set out from the beginning to say we wanted a cross-section of Rochester represented. And I think this year we are probably as close to that goal as we ever have been. Number of different stories, number of different voices, people at different points in their lives, different ways in which they were grown up, and that they live today. But it's amazing to see them come together and hear each other's stories and still that empathy and that connection that's created.
When you start at 7:30, how long is the show roughly?
It's 90 minutes. So by 9 o'clock, there's still time to go grab coffee and grab some wine and talk about what you've heard and kind of spark your own ideas for stories that's inspired in you.
Will you occasionally have, out of the roughly 40 applicants or people who are kind of auditioning, will you have stories that you go, boy, this would be great? It's a little similar to something we're going to do this year, but we want to kind of keep this on the burner for maybe next year. Does that happen?
It does. It happens almost every year, to be honest. There's, you know, take a topic like infertility. Very important. So many people have been through it, can relate to it. But this year in particular, we had two stories about that topic. And so we want to show that broad spectrum. And so sometimes you have to make choices and encourage those that you love their story as well to come back next year.
All right. Well, if we're okay, you're giving me the green light. We're going to listen to some of the little bits of these stories. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to tease them up this year.
Okay. Max, we're going to go around the table. Can
sure.
we start?
Yeah.
So I will open it up to you if you want to read, if you want to kind of give us a little preview or a little informational background first,
sure.
however you want to do this, because it's your floor now.
Sure. Yeah. So my story, I'm from California, and mine is kind of following a timeline. My relationship with my mother sort of as I've grown up and moved away and started my own life, but sort of looking back as an adult, when you sort of start to see your parents as not just your mom, but as people and individuals, and how you can have these complicated relationships with them. And I kind of go from my understanding of my parents as a child, and then as I grew up in my own journey. I'm going to read sort of the very beginning and then skip to a later part and just give an idea of the overall story.
Okay, so, and then we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit, but
sure.
Go ahead. So this is a preview of what you'll hear from Max Saturday night.
Great. My life has always been full of magic. My mother is a sturdy 5'2" with hair that reaches all the way down to her back tattoo of the 7-pointed star. A practicing pagan and a classic California hippie, she can still to this day be heard genuinely exclaiming when frustrated, "Oh my goddess." Our car stereo played Neil Young, Stevie Nicks, and the Grateful Dead. Most Disney movies were banned in our household for being sexist or politically incorrect. Grocery store trips were a meditative time for my mom, in which she'd painstakingly read the label of each and every item before placing it into the cart. If I behaved well, she would reward me with a piece of carob chocolate and allow me the privilege of selecting which charity box we'd be donating the 5-cent credit we received for bringing our reusable bag. So that's kind of my intro paragraph. Mm-hmm. And I can skip ahead a little bit further where we can go around.
I say keep reading.
Keep reading.
Sure. Okay. So this is a little further in my story. By the time my brother was a toddler, my parents were divorced, but my dad, broke and helpless, stayed living with us. Everything I know about unconditional love and compassion is owed to my mother. She was endlessly patient and kind in those years, still cooking for a man who left her and then mentally left all of us. I'm ashamed to say that back then I sometimes thought she didn't know how to fight back. I was a depressed and angry teenager, just as lost to how I could support my mother as she was to me. Now I know she was putting all her energy into survival. Almost every night I would hear her footsteps as she circled the house, lighting candles and casting her quiet spells. My mother's magic was a form of protection. We were always safe. When I was 16, I saved up $800 at a summer job and bought my first car, which I packed up the moment I graduated high school and moved on in search of my own community. I found it in the queer Mecca of San Francisco, and with healthy time away from home, I was able to explore my identity while my mom and I started to build a real adult relationship. I never had to come out to my mother as gay. What was unsaid had settled into the quiet knowing that all mothers possess. When I moved to Rochester for my second degree, however, distance again bred clarity, and it became unavoidable that I would need to come out as transgender. I did what any 21-year-old in this situation would do, got very drunk and wrote an email. What came after was days and weeks of unrelenting support from my mom, confusion and resistance from my dad. As I grew more estranged from him, the irony was not lost on me that I had begun injecting my own kind of drugs, though these affected my body in a way free from shame or secrecy, only ecstatic celebration. One of my fondest memories of my mother happened in my senior year of college while I was visiting home. We were at the grocery store when she ran into an old friend. They started chattering, and I shrank back away from the conversation, knowing what was coming. It wasn't until they were saying goodbyes that the woman seemed to see me for the first time. She said, "Oh, is this your son?" My mom nodded at her. "Strange. I thought you had a little girl, no?" The look of total confusion on her face is one I've come to know too well. My mom put an arm around me. "Nope," she says, "just the two boys."
Wow.
Right.
That's
awesome.
Right. That's a powerful, that's a hammer of a line. Just the two boys. The affection and appreciation for your mom comes through in a lot of different ways there. Yeah. Can I ask you a little bit about their reaction to the news that you shared with them?
My parents,
yeah.
You mean the coming out news or the...
when you talk about the confirmation to your parents that you're trans,
mm-hmm.
I think you used the term unrelenting support from your mother,
yeah.
Confusion and resistance from your
father. Yeah, yeah. So I think that was a... Now it seems like such a long time ago. That was, I was 21, I had just come to college, and I think I came out to them in my very first year of college, and the thing that I think was hard on both of them, and they sort of responded to that in different ways, was just I had moved away from home very, very far for the first time, and I was young, and I was really sort of forging my own path, and I think they were both a little bit worried that that meant they were going to miss out on this huge part of my life, and I was sort of going to literally become a new, different person, and they would be absent for that. And so I think my mom sort of knew that I was going to need to do my own thing and that she was there to support in any way she could, even if she was not quite understanding. But my dad, I think, I mean, the story, if you hear it in its entirety, I've always sort of had a more complicated relationship with him. And I think he's one of those people that is really a product of his time and really had a hard time understanding. And it was more that he wasn't as willing to understand, I think. And that was sort of a turning point for our relationship, I think.
Was he scared for you?
Somewhat, you know. I remember right after it happened that he gave me this phone call that was sort of like, you know, I've been doing a lot of research, and I'm glad that you didn't try to, you know, do anything like harm yourself, because I'm reading all these statistics about, you know, transgender and LGBT people, and I think he was just very overwhelmed by, you know, the different paths that people can take when they come out and go up against different reactions. But yeah.
And so we're going to go back to your mother, because the whole point really is to listen to your mother. So one more question on your father, though, because I think it's maybe instructive. Someone listening right now is going to be thinking about these things either as a parent perspective listening to a child, or their own perspective as a trans American trying to understand, are my parents going to, how are they going to feel about this? Mm-hmm. What do you want for kids and adults in the future who have those conversations? What do you want for them that maybe you did or didn't have with your dad?
That's a good question. I think that it's more just the willingness to have a difficult conversation. I think for me, it was sort of compounded by a history of never really feeling comfortable talking openly with my dad about personal things I was going through. And so I don't think it necessarily even has to do with being trans or with any specific identity. It's just about having that relationship where you feel comfortable talking about these things, and where you're saying, I'm willing to admit that I don't know. I'm willing to admit I don't understand. And what can I do to, you know, learn together, I think is the most important.
Now, on your mother's side, what does it mean to feel unrelenting support? What was that like?
Yeah, I think that my mom and I, it's sort of like she has been the kind of person where even if she doesn't understand, she doesn't really react with fear, in my experience. She really reacts with, okay, what can I do? How can we just hit the ground running with this? Like, how can I get involved? And I think with that, it was like, my mom's not the kind of person who would say, like, okay, I'm not sure where to go from here. She was the kind of person who said, like, okay, since we're going to be going through this apart, separated by distance, like, she said, can you send me a picture of you every week just so I can see if you're doing through changes, looking different, and we can kind of do it together. So I think she's the kind of person who's always looking at it from a new perspective like that.
Was your mother right about the Disney ban?
Oh, yes, I would say so. I don't think I missed out on much, honestly, in that regard.
It is kind of amazing when you look back, and people have compiled like the history of Disney through the especially when you go back to Song of the South and some other stuff, you go, whoa.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Gosh.
Definitely.
I wonder if it's a little better these days. Maybe your mother would be a little bit more pro-Disney these days.
Maybe, yeah,
I think they've been listening to people like your mother.
Yeah, I would hope so.
They claim they've been trying to.
Right.
Are you looking forward to Saturday?
I am, yes. I had gone last year. It was my first time and my first exposure to the whole production, which really inspired me to try out this year. And it's just an amazing experience. It's really, I felt fully engaged for the entire time. Yeah.
Why did you want to share your story publicly?
I think for me, I've always been a writer and a storyteller, and that's a really important part of my life. And I think since finishing college a couple years ago, I've been looking for a way to get back into that community. And for me, how I sort of process my relationships with the people close to me and just my experience in general is to write and to talk with others and engage publicly. And so this just seemed like a great opportunity to kind of do that personally, but also engage with a group and sort of have that experience.
What's your mom think?
She's very supportive. I mean, I think she was surprised. I didn't tell her that I was trying out for this or writing this or anything. I decided to wait until I found out if I was casted, but she's really just been, I wish I could be there, and I'm crying again. And I'm like, you know, but she's coming to see me for my birthday in August, so it'll be really nice to kind of connect at that point.
Max, thanks for giving us a preview.
Yeah, thank you very
really,
much.
Really powerful stuff. Let's turn to Sarah Oliveri, also a 2019 cast member. We're talking about Listen to Your Mother, the performance. And by the way, Corey Spike Carter, we're talking about how many years now?
This is the fifth year of Listen to Your Mother. We're celebrating the anniversary this year. And anyone interested in learning more about our show beyond today can check out rockthemic.org.
Okay. Let's get a sense for what Sarah Oliveri is talking about.
All right. So I'm a teacher in the Rochester City School District. And my story is about teaching and parenting, and it's kind of weaved in together. And I'm also a teacher on sabbatical for this semester. And I wrote this story on the first day of my sabbatical. So it was literally born on the day that I had a sabbatical. And I'm going to do a little bit of a reading to give you a preview of kind of what it sounds like.
Okay.
It was nearly 10 years ago that I first became what I call a teacher mama. At the time, I was teaching sixth grade as a special education teacher. Shamika Daniels was a tall, curvaceous, beautiful, spirited, awkward girl who just also happened to have a pretty significant learning disability. She wanted nothing to do with what I was offering her. She sucked her teeth at me, purposely sabotaged my small group instruction on a daily basis, and always made it known she didn't want my help. Despite her hating me, we were forced together like two ships in a storm and found small ways to weather the choppy, unpredictable waters. In true adolescent form, she took the most joy in belittling me in front of the entire class, mostly on my choice of outfits, making fun of my clown shoes or mismatched wardrobe. So when she suggested I take her shopping so she could dress me, I obliged. We went to a store called Rainbow. And little by little, she handed me dresses, earrings, bracelets, and belts until she had crafted the most perfect outfit. She decided it was so perfect, she had to have the same one. She assured me it looked good and to wear it tomorrow to school. And frankly, it was a great outfit, so I did. I put on the gold hoop earrings, bangles, and sashayed out of the house in my belted army green shift dress. I grabbed the only pair of brown shoes I had, per her instructions, and left for school. I couldn't help thinking of all the street cred I would get when the class saw us wearing the same outfit. When I got there, I was anxious to find Shamika. She was not wearing the outfit. She looked me up and down, frowning, and said, "Your shoes are wooden." I whispered, "Cute, right?" She did, however, wear the outfit the next day, and of course, much better than me. It wasn't until later that year that Shamika and I had our crashing moment. She was angry, irritable, and highly emotional from spending the weekend with her mother, who she rarely saw. She ran into the hallway, and I ran after her. I remember standing near the drinking fountain and the yelling. I don't remember what we said, but I do remember her screaming, "You are not my damn mother." And I remember my response leaving my mouth before I could take it back. "I wish I was your damn mother." Her gangly teenage body folded like a crumpled up note and collapsed into mine. Her tall frame towering over mine, I held her tightly and I rocked her like my baby daughter who awaited me at home. We cried and sobbed together in front of the drinking fountain. I can only imagine what we looked like in the hallway. For me, it was the crowning, the tearing, the birthing, the coming to life of a teacher mama. My daughter is now almost the age Shamika was in that moment, and here I find myself in another position, getting ready to birth again. The school psychologist wants to talk to me before my daughter's meeting. This is both the blessing and the curse of being a teacher in your own child's school. She shoves the tests in front of me. I'm familiar with them from my years as a special education teacher, but my brain goes blank, and I feel a numbness and sharpness creep in, like the pain felt from contractions. I hear learning disability and visual processing, and tears form slightly. I knead and push my feet firmly, rooting, pedaling into the ground, underneath the table hard, until I can feel my breath again, holding me in place like a carefully placed pin. It contains my tears.
There are lighter moments in the show also. Just
thank you, Corey.
We do have some comedy.
Look, there were moments of lightness there in your writing there, Sarah. But tell me why you wanted to write this story. Why you wanted to perform this story publicly?
I think because as a teacher, we need to talk about hard things and why we want to still be teachers. And it's the same as motherhood for me, that there's these moments that feel so intense. And in the intensity of the moment, we feel kind of alone. And I think my other reason for, hey, let's audition for this, Sarah, was kind of being brave and an exercise in courage for myself. Because this, wait until Marvin comes on next. Marvin is a natural, and Marvin is so good at speaking, and this is his jam. But for me, this is hard. It's really hard. I'm comfortable speaking in front of children, but it's a different thing to get up and be real and tell your story.
Role as mama is it's an interesting one, and a very controversial is not the right word, but I mean, it's tough to have to hear these stories and think about what kids need and what they have or don't have. How do you think about your job and the way your job has all these different layers to it.
I mean, I think layers is a really good word to describe a teacher. I love teaching, but it is intense. It's Teacher Appreciation Week, too. So shout outs to all the teachers out
there. Every week should be Teacher
Appreciation. Every week, every day should be Teacher Appreciation. But it is complicated, and I'm certainly not trying to be anyone's mother, but some of my most memorable experiences with children are in small rooms with children, holding them in a painful, vulnerable moment. So I think we are in the layer of mother. We have to mother children. We have to do whatever we can, but it's complicated.
You're right. It should be teachers appreciate. Every day should be Mother's Day. My 7-year-old was talking to him recently, said, you know, what do you want to do for mom for Mother's Day? And he had some ideas. And then just after that conversation, not at all like, well, what about me? But more just curious. He said, is there a kids' day? And I was like, dude, that's every day.
Every day.
Every day is kids' day. It's always kids' day. It's always your day, man. You only got one Mother's Day. Now, thankfully, he's enthusiastic about it. What do you say, Sarah, to people when they think about the role of a teacher who think, boy, you shouldn't have to do that?
I mean, I think being a teacher is a privilege, and I think we have to be a lot of things for each other in any sort of job. And, you know, I certainly don't see myself as some great saved this kid or anything, but just that we all need each other. And I think this particular child came back to me through my daughter, and I wanted to write about her. Because up until then, I was trying so hard just to teach, and I forgot just to be. And the minute I sort of let go and I just, stood in the hallway crying and rocking this giant child, that was my moment where I'm like, I am working too hard just in the role of thinking I have to teach this curriculum, and it's more complicated than that. And part of being a teacher is loving. And I think that was sort of my moment with this particular child.
How old was she when?
In this moment, she was about 12. And you'll have to come to listen to your mother, because there's another moment where I get to see her later on. I hope
our community does have a chance to hear this. And every year, hundreds do come out to do that. Sarah Oliveri's story is just one of how many?
One of 13.
So before we turn to Marvelous Marvin in our second half hour for his story, and for really a listen to your mother's story from Marvin, how do you get to a point as a teacher where that moment can happen at all? You know, because the first day of school, the first time you meet students, unless there's an extraordinary connection, or most kids and most teachers aren't ready to have that moment where you can break down and you can let it out, and they could put their arms around you and you can hold them. How do you get to that point?
I think, like I said before, you stop worrying about the doing and getting inside your head about, oh my gosh, you know, and more about just being with your kids, getting to know who's sitting in front of you, and letting children see who you are, being honest with them, giving them opportunities to be themselves, giving them opportunity for their voice, too. And I guess, part of my reason for wanting to include this particular child is because she was a child who just struggled so much. And, you know, I'd like to think that her voice is sort of in my story a little bit. And I think if it's sort of a mindset for teachers, if we go in with the idea that it's not about us, it's about children, and we need to listen to children, like you were saying, your son, why every day is Child Day. we need that. We do need to honor our children and stop making it so much about us, because it's not about us. It's about children.
powerful stuff from Sarah Oliveri. The full story, the full performance from her will be one of those 13 performances as part of Listen to Your Mother, the annual performance. It's usually on or around Mother's Day weekend. It's Saturday night, Saturday, 7:30 p.m., and this time is at Hochstein Performance Hall. So they have shifted venues, in case you're used to going to the Lyric, I think, in the
past.
That's
correct.
So not at the Lyric. It's at the Hochstein Performance Hall. Doors will open at 7. Tickets are online and available in advance. They're also going to be available at the door if there are tickets left, though they've routinely had 500, 600, 700 people in past years, and if they do that again, they're going to be close to selling out. So if you want to go, you want to take mom or anybody else you know on Saturday, you still have a chance to do that. Let's get our only break of the hour, and Marvelous Marvin is next with the 2019 story of Listen to Your Mother. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections. Have intimate scenes, so-called sex scenes, in movies, television, and theater changed in the era of Me Too? The New York Times has covered the subject of intimacy choreography, and it's made its way to Rochester. We'll tell you all about it. In our second hour, local writer Jeff Spivak has a new book called 22 Minutes, telling the story of a local Navy veteran who survived the worst defeat in U.S. Navy history. Talk to you Tuesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We like having Corey and the group back talking about Listen to Your Mother every year because I think it's helpful. Every story has a chance to connect in different ways. And you've been involved with this essentially since the beginning in Rochester?
Yeah, since the beginning. Monica Gabell, as well as a producer, she's been from the beginning as well. There were four of us who brought it to Rochester. We feel like the matriarchs of the group this year. We do have two also new production people as well, Raquel Walker and Aaron Julian. They're former castmates who graciously joined on to help us this year because even though it's a one-night-only event, there is 9 months of planning that goes into it. So,
and at the risk of sounding schmaltzy, I do want to know why you particularly have gravitated to this, why you wanted to bring it to Rochester, and why you keep staying involved with us.
Yeah, I am kind of on a journey to just make meaningful connections, meet genuine people. That's how I feel value in my life. And it's been really wonderful to see the ripples that come out of this. We have people that, like Max, who wanted to get connected as a professional writer. We have Sarah who, you know, for her own reasons, wanted to share the story. And all of the funds that we raise go to the Society for the Protection and Care of Children, which is an amazing organization in our city who work with children and families who have gone through a lot of trauma. And this event has given them a platform to be more publicly known. So we're really proud of that. This year, if I could just say one thing, one of my favorite stories is by Alex Sanchez. He's a local novelist. And his story is called We Must Go On. And this is a memoir about his mother and a lesson in resilience that she taught him after the loss of her husband. And we have kind of adopted this as our unofficial mantra of this cast, the We Must Go On. They've all been through, just as we all have been through, things in our life, experiences. But they've shown just this great amount of courage. And I hope that people connect with the people that they're with and they leave with a great sense of hope and of love. And that, you know, this audience, it's crazy because the concept is simple. You're going to come to an auditorium and you're going to hear people read a story. Some people, we might lose them just with that. But when you start to really listen to people and you hear the stories and it sparks in your own mind a sense of empathy because you've gone through it or you needed to hear this new perspective, and it's a group of hundreds of people, but it's intimate. And so people really leave kind of emotionally exhausted, like you've just watched your favorite 90-minute movie, but also really exhilarated for what's next.
And I imagine for those who go with their moms as sort of a Mother's Day gift, mm-hmm. which a lot of people have done, there's a lot of relating and communal aspects of this, even if some of the details you can't relate to. I mean, if my mom and I were sitting together listening to Max's story, I can't relate directly to the notion of having to tell my mother, hey, I want you to know I'm trans. I mean, that's not my life experience. But I can absolutely relate to the idea that when you go through hard things or when you are dealing with something and you feel like your mother's response is unrelenting support, no question, there for you, got your back, we'd probably just be looking at each other weeping, there's so many relatable themes. So tickets are still available. There you go, 7:30 on Saturday night. And Marvelous Marvin's next up. So, Marvin, I'm going to kind of turn the floor over to you.
Go ahead. All right, sweet. All right, so my reading is about a young man that knew more than his mother. That's how I really grew up. I thought my mother didn't know what she was talking about. I had a single mother. I'm the oldest of five. And it's, give you a quick little sample. So here we go. All righty. The strongest person I ever met was my mother. Also the kindest and the meanest. I guess you have to be when you have four boys and one girl. She showed me what it is to be persistent. They say a woman can't raise a man, but I would say she can help mold one. Honor thy mother and father is what keeps ringing in my ears. Well, my father was a myth. As if he was a folk's tale, I heard about him often. She used to say I had his tongue. I never knew what that meant. The young me thought it was a gift until I got older and found out it was a curse. As I look back, I can recall all the times that I thought she was against me, but in reality, she was trying to save me. Wish I had to listen to the warnings on what would happen if a child thought he knew more than his mother. She tried her best to keep me in her grip. She tried to guide me by holding my hand so I wouldn't fall. Somewhere down the line, her hold became loose. Maybe it was the stress. My mother tried her best to keep me out of trouble and off these streets. She was a single mother with five kids and two jobs. She stayed in church and prayed up, as the church folks would say. You see, me, I only seen that we was broke. I only seen my mother working her hands to the bone just to make a couple dollars and then be broke again before the weekend was over. She spent all she had to try to keep our family afloat. I only seen I had to be the man of the house. I found it safe around the folks my mother used to warn me about. She used to say, nothing comes out of a fast life but fast death. I just figured she ain't know what she was talking about. All I seen was nice cars, the respect, and the money. I figured I knew more than she did. My mother never drank or smoked before. I tried both. Yeah, I knew way more than she did. I tried to give her some money that I had made, and the craziest thing happened. She ain't want it. She called it the devil's money. I told her, Mama, you waiting on God, but I'm your blessing right now. Maybe my tone was too high. Or maybe my words was too sharp. Or me just too big for my britches, but I remember the slap to the face. She threw the money at me and told me, never bring the devil's business in the house again or around my siblings. That's the day that everything came crashing down. And when my mother found out I was living the fast life, and she sat me down and tried to talk to me. She said, money isn't everything, and the company you keep paints the person you are. She said, I need to get back into church and save my soul. She found my stash of money and a gun. She said, take them both and leave. As tears fell from her eyes, she spoke clear. She said, sometimes you have to walk through the fire to respect the flame. I didn't understand then, but I do now. Boom.
Is Boom actually written?
Yeah, Boom. No, but you know, that's the marvelous ad-lib.
Boom. Boom. It's like Marvin knows that we're on the radio, so you couldn't see him drop the mic.
But okay, you know.
And also the mic is fixed in here.
Yeah, so
and the engineer, Rob, would be upset if he broke it off and dropped it.
Yeah.
Rob's going, that was good enough that you may actually get the green light to drop that mic.
Thank you.
Marvin, how did you hear about the show in the first place, and why did you decide you wanted to do it?
I was doing a show at Rochester Speaks, and I actually seen Erin, and she actually came to me and was like, you know, I really think you should audition for this show. And after, you know, seeing everybody, I didn't honestly think I had a good fit. There's some powerful people that I seen looked up before. And God blessed to be with some awesome people, some awesome writers.
Now, you know, your life appears to be in a pretty different place than what you're describing.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know how much of that territory you're also going to explore in your Saturday night performance, but when your mom talked about having to go through the fire to appreciate, you know,
to respect the flame,
to respect the flame, what's the best way to describe what that feels like, what that means to you now?
Meaning like your mother can tell you all day, don't jump on the bed, but you ain't gonna understand the reason until you fall off. And that's exactly what she meant. You know, she can say all day, stay out the streets. That was the fire. I had to actually put my hand in the fire to understand exactly what she was talking about and why she was saying that.
Marvin, do you think when you talk about your father being a myth more than anything,
right?
If it wasn't just a myth of a father, if there was a father, do you think that you would have been in a different spot?
No, I honestly thank goodness for everything I went through, because you know my dad actually he is a myth. I mean he's around. I know he's breathing. I know what his name is because I'm the third, But he actually taught me everything not to do. I mean, I'm an excellent dad because of him. I hug my kids extra much because I know what it feels like to not get a hug. And I know my mother was mom and dad, seriously. I mean, she wore the boots and she wore the, you know, the mittens, you know. But so he actually, and she actually taught me, you know, how to be a man, believe it or not, by him not being there and seeing her, what she had to do, patience and persistence. That's what she taught me, and it stuck.
I saw a very interesting comment recently when a woman who's a somewhat regular communicator with the program on Twitter, on, among other platforms, was saying that she was marveling at her husband's work as a father, but then said, I have to remind myself that as much as I love my dad and my grandfather, the expectation for dads in previous generation was pretty low.
Oh, very low.
And the change is happening, and it's right. Slow, but it's a good one. You clearly look at your own role as a father.
Right.
It sounds to me like co-equal. Like that's.
Oh yeah, I'm trying to be mom. I mean, my mom is there. But yeah, I pick up the role because I see, like you said, back in the day, all a man had to do was go to work, pay the bills, and you know, sit down. Supposedly, a woman got to take care of the kids, clean the house, cook for the man, and then pretend or be happy, quote unquote.
I'm trying to think here. Was it producer Megan Mack? Did you show me that 1950s advice for housewives on how to handle your man when he comes home from work?
I seen that video.
It was unbelievable.
Oh, they say you're supposed to already have his food ready.
Oh, yeah. Food's got to be ready.
And yes.
Do you have it? Are you going to bring it? Oh, my gosh. So can I just read a few of these?
Yes.
Because tips to look after your husband. This is an extract from a 1950 home economics book. Have dinner ready. But it isn't just have dinner ready. They tell you these things like, plan ahead, even the night before, to have a delicious meal on time. This is a way of letting him know that you have been thinking about him and are concerned about his needs. Most men are hungry when they come home, and the prospects of a good meal and part of the warm welcome are needed there. So that's nice. Minimize all noise. At the time of your man's arrival, eliminate all noise of the washer, the dryer, dishwasher, or vacuum. Try to encourage the children to be quiet. Be happy to see him. Greet him with a warm smile. Be glad to see him. Clear away the clutter. Run a dust cloth over the tables. He will feel that he has reached a haven of rest and order, and it will give you a lift too, providing that for him.
It's gonna give her a lift.
That's really nice that they thought of the wife.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a little portion about that was for her. If the more you clean, the better you feel about yourself.
Wow.
And, 1950 from a home economics book, and it's a longer list than that. Right. And it's a real thing, by the way. That's a real thing that we were telling. I don't know. You had some visceral reactions listening to that. What do you think, Gory?
well, I have two daughters, and I guess my experience in raising them is probably exactly opposite than that. I mean, I will say that if you are in a loving relationship with someone, you should care for them, and you should do nice things for them.
Of course.
But, you know, I think the way that we live now, there's each couple, you know, you find a balance right. Somehow. And that seems very out of balance.
Oh my God. I could have read even more. And I don't mean to be lampooning the idea of doing nice things for someone you care about. I agree with you entirely. That's nice. And I also am not lampooning the idea of one person in a marriage or parenting situation who stays home to raise a kid. Not at all. It's just the notion that men work 9 to 5, but when they come home, their expectation is the soup better be on the table and it better be warm because that's how you show them that you love them. I don't know.
Well, I think, I mean, we see that play out all the time, right? It's just how the role in which we value people and how that's weighted. I'd like to think that I'm really excited about Listen to Your Mother this year because we actually have 3 men on our cast this year.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so it's been so exciting to, we've told people all along that, hey, you know, everyone has a mother and that's why it's universal. And then we come forward typically with an all-female cast. And so this year it's really great to see people, you know, really showcase their relationships with their moms and to show that it is universal. It's not a universal experience, but it's a universal topic.
Mm-hmm. Marvin, you never forgot it when your mother's reaction to the way that you were living and when she talked about a fast life equals a fast death and all of the things that stayed with you, obviously.
Right.
What was it that really started to turn that for you? I mean, was it one day, one moment? Was it a slower change?
Death. I actually, I had a friend.
Get right on your mic there for me. There you go.
I actually had a friend that get shot and he passed away. Mm-hmm. And after that, it really, I mean, for years I didn't hear what she was saying. I actually sat down in the hospital, and it's like it just came to me. Like, everything she was saying, I had to feel that fire. I figured she didn't know what she was talking about. My mother is a goody-two-shoes, the type that'll drink Coca-Cola and go want to go party. That's her thing. Go read a Bible or something like that. So I figured, you bugging mom. You know, I never thought she was a child before. I never thought she knew what she was talking about. But it really stuck. And just like Sarah, I'm a teacher too. I'm a creative writing teacher. And I got a youth group. And the best part about that, with my past, it helped me to teach the kids what not to do and why not. Instead of how my mother taught me, I got a little more insight to how to connect to them a little bit better, because my mother didn't have that. She did the right thing. She just didn't know how to say the right words to trigger me to understand it until it was too late.
Just last hour, we had the remarkable people from the Baden Street Settlement Organization talking about helping families that are struggling, families in poverty, a lot of single-parent households, a lot of situations where even when they're trying to raise kids to go to school, to see the value of education, they're still wondering, do you believe it? Do you believe that if you do the right things that you can get an education, that someone will hire you, that you can find work, and that it takes a while to get to the point where you actually believe that? Because when you see around you,
right,
you know, the evidence otherwise, do you believe that now, or have you did you feel that way growing up? Did you make some of the choices, you know, because you thought, well, that's what life is supposed to be?
Yeah, I mean, growing up, I honestly see my mother working, and we had nothing to show for it but rent. You know, I mean, like, and then I go outside and see kids, nice young kids with nice cars, and I figured she had it wrong. Like, no, that's not the way to get rich, mom. You working. They not even working hard. You in here every day sweating and stressing like they laughing. I never seen the bad side of that until until it happened, you know. But honestly, she was right from the jump. She was always right. I was the one that was blinded.
Yeah, and to editorialize a little, my observation is your mother may have been right. I'm not questioning her at all. But
right.
we also need a society where it's not more lucrative to
right.
to do some of the more
right.
nefarious things.
No, and that's the truth, though. I mean, that's the truth. There are so many jobs, to me, I feel, is so underpaid. And then there's so many jobs that's overpaid. And then when you find yourself in the middle, especially if you're not seeking education, you're only left for one thing. You know what I mean? Well, at least that's the only options you told. Most people don't
even seek. That's what you see, right?
That's what you see. You know what I mean? You don't seek, man, better things until you get out your neighborhood.
What do you hope people take from your presentation, your performance on Saturday night?
To honestly listen to your mother.
Yeah. We paid him to do that.
Yeah, but no, my piece is, it actually turns completely different. I would say mine it stands out. It's different. Everybody on our piece is different, but I believe mine is just a little different because I bring a little extra though. But they gonna walk away.
There may or may not be singing involved,
yeah.
which
yeah.
is amazing, and it's now stuck in my head while I'm doing the dishes. So
yeah,
thank you
right,
for
that's
that.
That's good. But yeah, it's gonna be excellent. That was the tip of the iceberg. Seriously.
Thanks for sharing it with us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thanks for giving us that little preview. And by the way, Marvelous, when you talk about the work that you're doing teaching and mm-hmm. some of the other, tell people a little bit more about what you are doing.
All right, so I have a youth group, ITAV. It takes a village, which it does. We have about 23 kids doing great. I'm actually a creative writing teacher at Rock Achieve. Shouts out Rock Achieve. yeah, it's a middle school. And honestly, I never thought... To me, that's the hardest job I've ever had in my life, ever, is having a little kids. You know, they have bad days, and every day you got to reset, act like it didn't happen. And, yeah.
In your summer, what do you do in the summer?
In the summer, I actually work. Thank you, Sarah.
You're
I work
welcome.
For Writers and Books. I actually have a teen slam team. So I'm always
slam
doing
poetry.
Slam poetry. Yeah, so I'm always into something. Yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you much.
Thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Really what you got is a portion of Marvin's story, that you can hear the entire performance and the full story of why Marvin says you ought to listen to your mother. The 2019 version, 13 performances, Saturday night, 7:30, Hochstein Performance Hall. And I got a note from Jim, who's telling me that Saturday it is the Rochester Twilight Criterium, 2 to 10:30. And just in case you're heading downtown, and you're navigating it, just be aware of it. But ought to be able to park and
lots of public parking. Yeah, you know, this is a really busy time for Rochester. We've got Lilac Festival, we've got Hamilton,
festival
we've got
season
a Red Wings game, but there is a lot of public parking and lots and garages and so on.
Yep, and so they're on their way to pack in the hall again. So if you want to get tickets in advance, we'll post a link on our various platforms. You can check it out online.
Yep, rockthemic.org, rocthemic.org.
Rockthemic.org. And, you know, before I let you go, Corey, what do you think people will walk away with on Saturday night?
If previous shows are any indication, I think you're going to come. And people, there's an anticipation. There's an energy in the room. It's a very supportive room. People are looking for the speakers to do well. They're taking what they can. They're applying it to their own lives. And they're connecting with the people that they brought with them. So it's typical for us to see someone reach out and hold the hand of someone they're with. We do provide tissues because this was just a few minutes of the 90-minute show, but we just hope that they leave hopeful and that's good enough.
And maybe think about listening to their mother. Also, call your mother. That's something that my mother says all the time. Corey Spike Carter is executive director and MC of this year's production. Thank you. Have a great time on Saturday.
Thanks so much.
And our thanks to Marvelous Marvin, Sarah Oliveri, Max Orr. Thank you. Congratulations for being part of the cast and have
thank
a
you.
Wonderful night
thank
Saturday.
You.
Thank you. Rob Braden always listens to his mother. He's the engineer of the broadcast. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Megan Mack, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great afternoon. Talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.